Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, May 3rd, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Get dressed, dear, or the better part of the day will be gone.
But wait, I like working in my jammies. And you know what? I can. You know why? I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. We're back today with the erotic mind of a true original, the charming and oh-so-smutty Heidi Ciampa. This is part two of our chat, and we pick up precisely where we left off last week. And here's some fantastic news. Part one of my chat with Heidi, which appeared last week at this time, is officially the most popular interview podcast to date. It broke all download records for a podcast in a single week. So yay for that. Oh, yeah. However, if you missed last week's show, don't worry. You can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the site's search function in the sidebar, type in podcast number 202, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. Heidi will read another provocative selection from the fruit of her erotic mind. And here's a tip. If you have a shoe fetish or a spanking fetish, this reading will make you wet.
Naturally, one would be stirred up.
That's true enough. Look for Heidi on her website, heidichampa.blogspot.com, and she's on Facebook too, don't you know? Look for Heidi Landis Ciampa. Today's program is brought to you by So Hard for Men. So Hard is what we in the business lovingly call a boner pill. But So Hard for Men is not just any old Viagra knockoff. No siree. It's a pure, all-natural, herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused.
May I say something rather daring?
Okay, but only after I'm finished talking. Listen, I've tried So Hard for Men, so I can testify to its effectiveness. Look for my review of So Hard for Men on my product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. Use the site's search function, type in the keyword herbal, and you can read my comments and evaluation. The makers of So Hard for Men are so confident that their product works that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. They also proudly offer all their first-time customers a free, no-obligation trial pack. This is an amazing opportunity to test this product on your own.
My poor boy has brains, but he's very muddled.
Hey, Dad, I'm standing right here. Get your wood the natural way. Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Heidi, and thank you again for joining us this week. I've been so eager since last week to get more of the meat of you because the stuff that we were talking about last week was so exciting and so informative. I want to pick up precisely where we left off. Last week we were talking about the power of words and the power, how words change meaning or meanings change for words as we use them in different contexts and stuff. So I want to ask you, is there a difference for writing for a female audience as opposed to a male audience, or is there no difference in your mind?
I don't make a conscious choice to change the way I write depending on who the audience is. I think that over time I've developed a style that I like to stick with. My own voice, so to speak. And I don't have a conscious decision to sit down and say, okay, because this is for men or this is for women, I'm going to change the way that I approach it or the way that I write. That being said, depending on the call for submission, I may change subtly the way things are written, or I may change like the tone or demeanor. But I don't actively say, you know, I have to change everything about this because it's written for men or written for women.
Right, right.
So,
and that was something very interesting you just said there about the call for submission. So, basically, editors or publications would contact you or send out a call to, you know, authors and say, you know, we're doing a compilation, you know, in terms of BDSM stuff or lesbian erotica or gay erotica, and, you know, if you would like to participate, you need to supply us with a, you know, 4,500 word piece. And is that how it goes, basically?
Usually it's I mean, there is a website called Erotica Readers and Writers that kind of posts a lot, like a litany of different calls. A lot of editors work with them to kind of put their calls out far and wide to people. Sometimes they are private calls where you get them directly from the editor.
I see. Good.
Based on work that you've done with them in the past.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, they usually have specific an idea, a theme, be it BDSM, be it romantic, be it wedding, or you know, a long-term love, and then you kind of want to fit. If you want to be in the collection, you want to try and fit as much as you can into those parameters. But I also like to kind of look at it from a different angle. Like, I always try and find something that other people may not have thought of, to kind of bring a fresh idea to it, because you don't want them to get, you know, 500 of the same story. So you want to always make yourself stick out and try and come up with a new spin on a, like a fresh idea on the same topic.
I know I like to stick out.
Who doesn't, really? But yeah,
but I digress.
So in that way, it can change the tone or the feeling of a story.
Right.
But it's not, I don't actively seek to change because, like, if a guy's going to read this, I want it to say this. Or, you know, it's more just about what an editor might be interested in or what that audience may be looking for.
Exactly.
But I don't think of it in terms of necessarily gender. I think of it more in terms of what that person is looking to put out and that it'll fit nicely with their collection.
Right. So let me ask you a question then in terms of that is, do you find yourself writing erotica, you know, just because you want to do it, or do you wait and discover a call for submissions and then tailor what you want to create to fit that call?
I kind of do both.
I see.
I have stories that I write just because, like, an idea will come to me, and I say, I should, you know, instead of just thinking about it for 10 days, I might as well just put that on paper and, you know, kind of flesh it out and see if it goes anywhere.
Right.
No matter what that may be. Like, the ideas can come, you know, at any time. They come from anywhere. And if it sticks in my head, then I'll try and write it down and see if anything comes of it. Mm-hmm. But I also, you know, I have, and I do, if a call for submission comes through that I think is really interesting, and it kind of immediately sparks something, or after like a day or two, I'm like, oh, you know, it would be great. And then I can, so I kind of do it from both sides. I have stuff that I write that I never know if it'll see the light of day.
Right.
And then I have stuff that I kind of more tailor to what I know is being looked for at that particular moment. So I find that kind of helps me keep it fresh, like that I'm not always a slave to just what is being asked. I kind of like to have stuff that I just write that may or may not fit. It may or may not ever get published, but if it works for me, then I know it's out there, or I know it's on my computer and I can at least have it for myself. So
that was kind of leading me to my next question. And do you don't write longhand or anything like that. You type away at a computer, right? A word processing kind of thing.
Yes, I have my wonderful laptop that I got a couple years ago. I write everything on it. So.
Right. I was surprised to learn that, you know, there are a number of people who I've interviewed in this series that do write longhand. And I think that's absolutely fascinating. I mean, it's just like a pen and, you know, a quill pen. And
I got this vision in my head of, you know, dipping a quill pen into ink. Like, I don't ever think of like a ballpoint pen and a piece of paper anymore. But when I was jotting down some ideas for this interview, I found myself writing longhand for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And like my hand started to hurt after a while. I'm like, wow.
It's so true.
I've done this.
It's so true. And my penmanship, I can barely read my own writing anymore. And I used to have really great penmanship from, you know, Catholic school. It's like, right.
I was going to say my teachers would be so disappointed in me. My penmanship is atrocious right now. I'm such a typer. I was writing longhand and I'm like, what am I even doing? Like, it's ridiculous.
So, could I prevail upon you to read again from your work?
Sure.
Oh, yippee.
That would be great. This is going to be a snippet from a story. The book just came out. It's called Ultimate Spanking. It's a collection from Excite Books.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came out, and I'm going to be reading the second half of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see where I want to begin here. Okay. I promised myself these would absolutely, definitely, without a doubt, be the very last pair of shoes I would buy for a very long, long time. The very last thing I would have to hide. The very, very last pair of boots I would ever need. This time, when I went home, I didn't bother trying to hide anything. I walked straight into the bedroom, fearless. Jake had called. He was working late, so I would have plenty of time to enjoy my boots before they had to go into their hiding place with the others under the bed. I changed my clothes and poured a glass of wine. Pulling the boxes and bags, I started putting on the shoes, admiring them one pair at a time. I had missed them all so much. The last thing I did was slide the beautiful boots out of the box and slip them on. But as I stood in my underwear, staring into the closet, trying to find the perfect outfit to go with them, I heard the doorknob turn. My heart shot into my throat. Jake walked into the room, his eyes wide with disbelief. All around me were shoes and belts and new outfits, all out of hiding, all finally exposed. Jake looked at me, and then the shoes, and back again. Finally, he found his voice. Would you like to tell me what the hell all this is? Where did it come from, Tara? I felt sick. The look on his face made me forget every good feeling buying the shoes had brought. I couldn't think of a single thing to say that would make it better. He walked towards the bed, surveying the damage. With Jake in the room, and with my plunder all gathered in one place, the scale of what I had done surprised even me. His hand settled on the Kenneth Cole shoes, the perfect purple ones. Answer me, Tara, now. I swallowed. I had no defense, especially after all he had given up for me. I'm so sorry, Jake. I can't explain it. It's like an addiction. I don't know why I do it. I can't stop. Jake came towards me, still clutching the shoe in his hand. I had never seen him look so angry. He was always so sweet and so gentle. But that Jake had been replaced by a far more serious and pissed off Jake. He grabbed my wrist, and I was overcome by another shot of adrenaline. My hands started shaking uncontrollably. You're sorry. That's all you have to say? We agreed no more spending. I gave up my trip for you. For us. You couldn't give up some lousy shoes? God, Tara, this is crazy. I knew you were a shopaholic, but this is ridiculous. You were willing to lie to me for this? He shook the shoe in front of my face and threw it back on the bed. His hand was still around my wrist. And what do we have here? He gestured to the boots on my feet. I had forgotten they were still on. Nice boots. Just buy them today? I nodded, not knowing what else to do. Jake, let me try and explain. But before I could say another word, he pulled me towards the bed and turned me around to look at the huge pile of extravagances I had accumulated. So how long have you been lying to me, Tara? How long did you wait before you started buying stuff again? He was behind me, digging his hand into my arm, his breath hot on my neck. Since March. He seemed unsurprised by my answer. I heard him sigh, and I waited for another rant, another onslaught of how terrible I was. What am I going to do with you, Tara? What are we going to do about all of this? His tone wasn't angry anymore. That didn't surprise me either. Jake always had trouble staying mad at me, even when I did something really dumb. I was surprised, however, by his mouth on my neck, gently biting my skin. My bra was soon on the floor, and I leaned back into him and let his hands roam over my body. Just as I relaxed into him and his teasing fingers on my nipples, he stopped. Suddenly, he had my wrists together in his hand and pulled me down towards the footboard of the bed. I tried to break free, but he was too strong. Grabbing a scarf from the pile, he quickly knotted it around my hands and then to the metal frame. I pulled on my restraint, but it was too tight. This isn't funny, Jake. Let me go. He just smiled at me. I was bent at the waist, my face close to the mattress. Oh, I don't think so, honey. I think you need to be punished for what you did. For lying to me, for breaking my trust. What else am I supposed to do? You won't listen, and I can only think of one suitable course of action. He ran a hand over my back before smacking my ass lightly. The jolt of contact sent me forward, another surprise for my gentle boyfriend. He slapped again, just hard enough to let me know he was serious. Any thoughts I had about him joking had finally left the room. Let's have a look at some of these shoes, shall we? Weeding through the pile, he found the purple Kenneth Cole again. Holding it by the heel, he looked it over. Pretty. How much did they cost? Before I could answer, he slapped the sole against my skin. Once, twice, three times more, the shoe hit my ass. I gasped, not so much from the pain, but from the whole situation. It was making me impossibly hot, something I had not expected. 300. With that answer, another three hits came down on my flesh. It hurt more than I expected, but each hit turned me on more than the last. I had never considered spanking before, because I never thought Jake would agree to it. This new side of him was having a huge effect on me. He put down the shoe and reached for another one from the stack. It was the black Jimmy Choo I had bought months before. What about this one? What did this set us back? He ran the suede gently over my ass, now hot from the spanking. I don't remember. Maybe 400? The words were just out of my mouth when the next barrage came. I lost count of how many times he spanked the beautiful shoe against my ass. Over and over I felt the sting on my skin, the small sole radiating pain out and over my whole body. My panties were soaked through, and I felt the sweat forming on my face. Jake stopped and stood behind me, admiring his work. You should see how red your ass is. I jumped when I felt the palm of his hand, the gentle rubbing like felt like sandpaper, his touch not doing a thing to soothe me. Soon his fingers found their way to my pussy. He teased me through the wet fabric. My, my, you must be enjoying yourself. Maybe you did all this on purpose, to finally get me to spank you. You could have just asked, you know. He shucked off my thong, pulling it down over the soft leather of the new boots. These really are nice boots, especially from this view. I think they were just made for this purpose. His hand slipped up my thigh and continued upward until they reached my nipples, which were hard and aching for attention. Teasing me, I felt his hard cock through his pants, rubbing my raw bottom. But he didn't let it remain there for long. The spanking continued. Chanel, Manola Blahnik, Christian Louboutin, they all had their turn on my searing hot flesh. Finally, he stopped torturing me, leaving the rest of the shoes in a mess around me. My wrist ached from the scarf, and I was desperate for him to fuck me. I whimpered as he walked around me, begging him to fuck me to release the ache he started inside me. Just when I thought he was going to leave me there, his finger slipped into my cunt with such ease. He leaned down and kissed my lips. His gentle side didn't stay for long as he put his hand in my hair, pulling my head back. I couldn't take much more. I whimpered again as the pain shot straight to my pussy. Do you think you've learned your lesson yet? I nodded, pushing myself back on his waiting fingers. I think deep down we both knew I would never reform. We'll see about that, won't we? He groaned as he finally entered me with his hard cock. He fucked me slow, bumping into my tender ass with each thrust. I murmured promises of willpower, self-control, and definitely no more shoes. But as my eyes scanned the bed, I realized there was a sale at Saks the following week. After all, he hadn't said anything about purses, had he? That's it.
I love it. So, two fetishes in one story. I just can't stand it. It's just too wonderful.
Oh, thank you. I really liked that one. I was a big fan of that story.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
And mentioning all the name brand shoes, too.
Well, I love shoes. I combine, you know, two loves in one story, so that's always a good thing.
There you go. Absolutely. So I noticed that you, and you've mentioned this before yourself, that you write gay-themed fiction.
Yes.
What prompted that?
Well, it was...
Do you have a penis?
Kind of, no, I don't.
Do you know someone who does?
I keep one around. You know, I have one on hand at all times, of course. I
love
really
it.
Know. I rent, you know, I don't own.
Well, they're good to have, you know.
Yes,
even if, you know, I mean, you don't actually have to own one, but you should have one near to hand, I always think.
I think that's a good philosophy of life. I should write that one down.
You ought to.
It's actually kind of been a long time coming. When I first started writing, I wrote obviously more predominantly for heterosexual markets. I kind of always had this inkling in my head, though, that I wanted to explore writing male-male. Mm-hmm. And I had found a couple of submission calls online, and I kind of hemmed and hawed and said, oh, well, you know, maybe I will, maybe I won't. And over time, it kind of kept cropping up, and I finally just decided to send something.
Right.
And I actually had gotten a piece published in a lovely collection called Like Magnets We Attract, which is edited by Jay Valentine. And it was my first published male-male piece. Mm-hmm. And So that success kind of emboldened me to keep going. And I've actually been getting more acceptances for male-male pieces than I have for just plain heterosexual pieces. So it's been going really well, actually.
It's an amazing thing. And, you know, I didn't know for the longest time, you know, the dimensions of gay erotica that is being written by women and the extent of the female audience for gay erotica. I think it's absolutely fascinating.
I wasn't aware of that either when I first started thinking about writing it. I wasn't really aware that there were so many female authors.
Mm-hmm.
I did the more research I did, the more I found that they were out there, that, you know, they hide kind of under initial names or things
right,
like that.
Yeah.
And you
publish under Heidi, right? So, I mean, there's no, you know, very few men are named Heidi.
Yes, actually, I was just going to mention, though, I do, some of the editors have approached me about using.
Yes.
So I have actually been published under the name H.L. Ciampa, which is my first two initials and then
right,
my last name.
Right.
I was hesitant at first to do that, but I don't really see a problem with it because in the bio that I put, you know, that they list in the back of the book for all the contributors,
right.
My website is plainly listed as HeidiCiampa.blogspot.com, uh-huh. So it's not like it's a real big secret that I'm a woman.
Yeah.
But some editors...
And it must be expected by this point. I mean, I could understand, you know, like years ago that, you know, the, you know, gender of the author needed to be, you know, hidden, but nowadays, I mean, the cat is out of the bag, as it were, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely. And I do have stories coming out that are for male-male books that use my real name.
Yeah.
But some editors, I think, feel their audience would be more comfortable with another name. So I do publish under both names.
Right.
More so under my real name, obviously, but
right.
I don't mind doing it.
Right.
Because I understand their concerns. And I do think, though, over time, I think that concern will really disappear because
right.
it's not only just the writers who are writing it, the audience is... are growing for women reading male-male erotica. So
right. And besides the fact, I mean, everyone knows that if it's, you know, two initials and a last name, it's got to be a woman. I mean, it's, you know, the jig is up. I mean, the cat is out of the bag. We know that, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, those who have, you know. So
absolutely. That's another reason I wasn't really that reluctant to say okay.
Yeah.
Because I was like, right, everyone knows. and I feel also that I'm kind of getting to the point where my name's been out there enough where
right.
people would be like, wait a minute, I wonder if that's Heidi Ciampa. Like, you know, like they would put it together right away because Ciampa's not that common a name.
Right.
And Heidi Ciampa is really not that common a name. So
right.
I think it's not like it's a big secret, but
right.
I don't
yeah.
mind doing that if that's what the editor
yeah.
Feels is necessary.
Right. Do you have a writing ritual or routine?
I try and write every day. I'm
uh-huh.
not always successful on that front.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a set time I like to do it. I find I'm a bit of a night owl.
Oh, no kidding, really.
But if the mood strikes me during the day, I write during the day. I used to have a big problem where, like, as soon as I would lay down to go to sleep, all the ideas would
oh,
come.
Oh, right, of course.
But, yeah, I actually operate a little bit on what I call West Coast time, where I, you know, I feel like I'm more productive later on, like,
mm-hmm.
between maybe 7 and 9,
uh-huh.
where it's so, that would be like the end of my technical 9 to 5 day if I lived
uh-huh.
on the West Coast.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I kind of let it happen. This is what I do. I don't have a day job, so I'm kind of free to do that.
Wow, good for
as
you.
Much as possible. Yeah, I'm very lucky. I know a lot of people don't have that luxury,
yeah.
so.
So how do you get warmed up to write this smut? Do you touch yourself impurely, perhaps? I know that, the reason I'm asking that is that I get warmed up for these interviews that way.
Sometimes, I'm not going to lie, usually, I find that's more of a problem during the writing process, that, you know, sometimes...
Sticky fingers, we should do a whole anthology called Sticky Fingers.
Exactly, I mean, you're kind of interrupted, you know, during the process, I mean,
right.
it does happen, it's one of the hazards of the job, you just have to put up with that kind of constant...
you know, if you can get yourself off on your own stuff, that is a... indication that others are going to get off on it too.
Well, that's yeah, I kind of look at it that way, that if it's not doing anything for me, I have little hope that it would do anything for anybody else. So
that's always
a good indicator of it's going in the right direction.
Right. Are there topics that you gravitate toward or topics that you avoid?
Not really. I mean, I'm kind of open to a lot of different things. I do struggle with kind of, it's very popular right now, the paranormal slash vampire stuff.
Exactly.
I have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
Although I actually do have my very first, I guess, fantasy themed piece coming out next year.
It's speculative fiction.
Yes.
Isn't that what it's called? Right. Exactly.
Yes, that's the word.
I'm learning all the... the vocabulary.
In a collection called Men at Nude Monsters at Midnight.
Cool.
My first foray into that, but I'm not real comfortable with that yet. But other than that, I don't tend to shy away because part of the process for me is kind of expanding my horizons and trying things that I may not have, you know, think that I could write just to see if it works. And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But I find it's better for me if I try and push myself than always writing the same thing, because it keeps it interesting for me too.
Right. Is it possible for you to eroticize something that you don't find particularly sexy?
It's possible. I don't know how successful I am at it.
Right, good thinking. There you go.
I mean, if I find something incredibly like repugnant or, I mean, not that there's a lot out there that I do, but if it's something that how can I put this? Like, I'm not into, like, I need an example. Like, water sports or anything like that.
Right.
So I think that maybe I'd have more trouble.
Uh-huh.
But I also try and put myself into the place of the character where I can hopefully see how they might find it erotic. But it is more difficult for me anyway. I'm not going to lie. I know some people probably don't have that issue, but there's always a little bit of can I pull this off? You know, if I don't find it particularly...
Yeah.
Erotic. Can I get to a place where I do enough to write about it intelligently and do it justice?
Right. And there must be, you know, many opportunities for you to, eroticize, you know, stuff that is not particularly erotic, you know, like food or, you know, unerotic clothing, although shoes, as we talked about earlier, very erotic. But, you know... Do you find yourself being pressed into making some situations that would traditionally be not erotic situations erotic?
I wouldn't say pressed necessarily, but it is, that's part of what I was saying about kind of keeping it fresh and
trying
to get a new perspective on things. Like when I wrote the story, the Spender Save story about the shoes, I know there are people out there who don't find shoes particularly erotic, or it's more of, for them, it might be a foot fetish type situation.
Right.
And so I kind of wanted to approach it like, well, instead of it being like a foot fetish piece, like using them as an implement to spank, which I think a lot of people might not go there right off.
That was a clever twist, I must say.
But it definitely, it is always a challenge, like to take, like, I mean, I know for some calls for submission, like you'll look at it at first and you're like, okay, you know, is it, like, do I even find the topic erotic? Like, whatever it might be. It's usually either, like, a profession or, like, some kind of inanimate object, you know, like, and sometimes you look at it and go, I just don't know if I can do it. But other times, like, it just comes to you right away. Like, and I think if you look at it, you know, there's a lot of things that people would look at and go, oh, that, I would never find that sexy, or how could that be sexy? And there, people do it all the time, and they make it very sexy. So,
have you been writing all your life?
Yeah, in some form or another, I have. I used to, when I was little, I used to fancy myself like a storyteller, and I always kept a diary, and I liked to write. And in college, I wrote for a music magazine, and I did reviews and like concert and CD reviews and things like that.
Yeah.
I kind of toyed with writing erotica earlier, but I didn't really start seriously doing it until 2008.
And what prompted that?
Just I kind of had
build
enough.
Build up. You know,
yeah.
Erotic build up. The heartbreak of erotic build up. It's terrible. That's like visible panty lines. It's
exactly.
Terrible.
I thought about it and thought about it, and I kind of got tired of putting it off.
Right.
And I was like, well, you know, what's the worst that can happen? If nothing happens, nothing happens.
Right.
So I sent some stuff out, and I was lucky enough to, the first couple things I sent out, I got accepted. So success bred more desire to do it. And it just kind of, it has snowballed into this thing that is way beyond my expectations.
Yeah. Do you think that reading and writing erotica is is a good thing for other folks? Is it empowering to you as a woman? And would it be empowering, do you think, for other people?
I was empowered before, but it
right.
definitely does. I think it can be extremely helpful for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think there are people out there who unfortunately do not probably have the sex life they want.
Right.
And may find saying that to their partner difficult.
Right.
And I do find that if you can't express yourself with your own words, that maybe having erotica in the bedroom or sharing it with your partner or even just alone can give you more of a vocabulary to say what you want to say or kind of make it okay to explore, because it's not really what, you know, it's not your words, it's somebody else's words, but in a way they're your words.
Uh-huh.
So if it can give somebody a vehicle to express themselves sexually or experiment or mm-hmm. kind of take the pressure off and allow them to explore without guilt or, mm-hmm. you know, or bad feelings, I think it can be a very useful tool.
Right.
In that arena.
Right.
I had done a reading in Philadelphia in February, and the woman who runs, it's called the Erotic Literary Salon, the woman who runs it has a PhD in sexology, and that is one of the basis for her
exactly
therapy. And
I do the same thing in mine.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it, you know, we talked about that after the reading, that how empowering it can be for women who feel like they don't have a way to express that to their partner. Erotica really allows them to open up, and
right.
even in their solo sex life, it can really help them a great
Absolutely.
Deal.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And, you know, and the reason that I asked about the empowering question is that, you know, we talked about this last week, you and I, in terms of the power of words and, you know, that word in particular, cunt, you know, that, I mean, how many people in the town where you live or the city where you live, you know, women are writing the word cunt on a regular basis? So, and you've desensitized it, you've now incorporated it into your art, and you have set that word free for yourself. Lots of women don't have that opportunity unless they sit down and actually write it or even read it out loud,
right.
own that word. So
absolutely.
It's an interesting thing, and I think there is such a therapeutic role for erotica in helping people overcome their sexual inhibitions, as well as, you suggest, you know, opening up a discussion with a partner.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my whole life, I've been very open with my sexuality. I've never, you know, like, had a problem expressing it. I consider myself very lucky, though. I learned about my body at a younger age,
yes.
and I was always open with my desires with my partners, and
right.
I've had a very fulfilling sex life overall.
Right.
But I know that for a lot of women, that is not
yeah.
their experience
yeah.
at all.
Right.
And if I can help even a little bit, people improve their sex life, then
right.
I feel like that would be a great thing.
Right.
You know, either by themselves or with a partner. I think
right.
that, because I think that it's so important, and I think a lot of people accept less than they deserve on that front. And
true.
I really think that, you know, even if it's just a simple story in a book that can spark something within you and spark a conversation, I think it's a lot more important than people would ever really give it credit for. So
right. Good. So, a couple quick questions as we conclude. Who are your inspirations and your sexual heroes, if you have any?
I get inspiration everywhere.
Oh, good.
I mean, I don't necessarily write, I obviously write fiction. I don't necessarily autobiographical, I don't use my own life necessarily. I mean, I do take bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I can get inspired, like, listening to other people talk on the street or, you know, something that a friend of mine does that is funny, or like something that happens at their job. Anything can spark an idea.
Right. How
so
cool.
I find that just, you know, spending time with people and talking to people and, you know, being open to what is going on around you is for me the greatest inspiration, because people will say something and they have no idea that it's going to end up in one of my stories, you know.
So have to be very careful talking to you.
Exactly. So, you know, I will dedicate my first novel to all my friends because, you know, they've all helped me without really realizing it. So, and as far as sexual heroes, I mean, I love Susie Bright.
Yes.
I think she's done so much. People like Nina Hartley.
Yes.
And Tristan Taramino, who
yes.
go out there into the world and, spread the positive messages of sexuality.
Absolutely.
I think they all do excellent work.
I think so too.
I mean, I love Allison Tyler as a writer and an editor. She's fantastic to work with, and she would be somebody that I would aspire, you know, one day to be like, mm-hmm. just how successful she's been in erotica.
Mm-hmm. And finally, any advice for the novice writer?
I'd say the number one thing is persistence. I know it can be very difficult, the rejection and feeling like you're not getting anywhere, but I would say, you know, the persistence and write what you love.
Right.
That's the most important thing. Because if you don't love it, the chances of somebody else loving it are pretty slim, I think.
I think so, too.
And check out eroticareadersandwriters.com. Definitely they have a lot of resources, not just with calls for submission, but advice, you know, about how to get started, you know, even little pieces about improving your writing. I mean, they're a really invaluable resource to people who are interested in getting started.
Good, good, good. And finally, your web address, and walk us around a bit.
It is HeidiChampa.blogspot.com. It's a blog about me, my work, my life, my craziness, and it has links to all my...
And eye candy. Don't forget eye candy.
And plenty, plenty of eye candy for everybody. It has links to all my work, the anthologies that I'm in, the websites that I am on, keeps you up to date on what's coming out and what I'm up to and the stupid things I do during the day and on my weekends. So you can check it out there.
Thanks, darling. It's such a pleasure spending this much time with you. You know, you're such a sweetheart, and you have such a wonderful point of view about all of this. Thank you so much for taking the time to share that with us.
Thank you for having me. I've had a great time.
Good kiddo. Be well. Until we speak again, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. What a great show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is So Hard for Men. I know what you're thinking. With so many herbal supplements on the market that boast fast-acting results, it's hard to know which erection-enhancing formula to choose or if one should just avoid them altogether. I always tell my clients to beware of bogus claims and dangerously adulterated products that abound in the marketplace. So Hard for Men is different. It's made up of 100% herbal extracts. It's as effective as any medically prescribed drugs I've tested, but it's also much kinder to my system. There are no headaches, unsightly flushes, upset stomach, rise in blood pressure, or altered vision.
Oh, please leave this to me. I know how to deal with these people.
In my years-long search for the holy grail of herbal erection enhancers, I have found only one product that consistently delivers on the promises it makes without any of the nasty side effects. So Hard for Men improves genital blood circulation, which assists in achieving and sustaining a strong erection. As you know, every human body is unique, and each of us metabolizes what we consume in a slightly different way. So keep that in mind when you use So Hard for Men. And just so that we're clear, So Hard, it's not miraculous. It will not override an unhealthy lifestyle, but it can positively affect our sexual response cycle, making us more easily aroused, as well as more energetic lovers.
You think I have been narrow-minded?
Well, maybe just a little bit. Look for the So Hard for Men banner in the sidebar of my site, drdicksexadvice.com, and look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe, and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.